I think it's time to do some news and comment. What do you say?
Peter B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins, news and comment. It's Friday, March 31st, 2017. And for us here in California, March is going out like a lamb. We've got a beautiful sunny day and 80-degree temperatures predicted for this weekend. As usual on Friday, we are live on Facebook. I want to say hello to the audience that is building right now. And you early connectors, please do me a big favor and share this link right now. That'll multiply the audience as the podcast continues. And on the half hour, I'll be opening up the phone lines to take your calls. You can dial in at 415-455-0102. That's 415-455-0102. It's just like the old talk radio shows that I've been doing for years, but I don't need a radio station and a transmitter. My signal isn't limited to a specific zone. And hello, Sydney, Australia. We are international today. That's great to see. Thanks for connecting up there, Mark. Great to, and he says it's sunny in Australia too. Great. So here in the U.S. of A., a sneaky move by Republicans late yesterday to pander to the most extreme elements of their political universe. And it is a sneaky move because in and of itself, this vote will not defund Planned Parenthood. What they've done is overturned an Obama rule that blocked states from individually defunding Planned Parenthood. And now the Congress is sending a resolution to Trump, this according to one of the supporters, ensuring that states are not forced to fund America's abortion giant, Planned Parenthood. Now, there's the lie right there. 3% of Planned Parenthood's funding is for abortion. And so that is a lie of gigantic proportions to smear Planned Parenthood as purely an abortion provider, because 97% of the services don't have anything to do with abortion. They are birth control. They are tests for sexually transmitted diseases and cancers. And those services are going to be cut in the service of the political agenda of the far right in this country. Now, they even had to trot out Mike Pence, who, as governor of Indiana, led this charge to cut out Planned Parenthood and to basically promote sexually transmitted diseases, teen pregnancies, and, of course, cancers. That is the net effect of this. But Mike Pence went to Capitol Hill to cast his vote, and they even had to bring Georgia Senator Johnny Isaacson in a wheelchair to get the final vote that they needed, because two Republicans defected. That would be Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. So this is a payback. This is an attempt to grease the base, because a week ago, when they had to pull the Trump Care repeal and replace boondoggle, well, one of the elements in there that was catnip for the far right was a Planned Parenthood defunding measure that was supposed to be scheduled for a full year. So this is the first step. And, of course, it's based on lies, based on severe misrepresentations, and, of course, the selectively and deceptively edited videos that were just, the people who took those videos, David DeLeiden and his accomplice, have been charged in California with violation of our privacy laws for shooting those videos before they edited them to make it look like Planned Parenthood executives were not only buying and selling the byproducts from abortion, but that they were drinking wine and enjoying the conversation. And it was a trick. It was a setup. But that doesn't stop the right wing. They succeeded with the same plot, the same scheme to bring down Acorn. And this effort to reduce, if not eliminate, Planned Parenthood is extremely troubling. Now, I want to thank the people at Ralph Nader's Public Citizen, because they have been sounding the alarm about this for a couple of weeks now. The basis for this action yesterday in the Congress against Planned Parenthood is an obscure bill or law called the Congressional Review Act. And it allows Congress, by a majority vote in both chambers, and with limited debate, no chance of a filibuster, no requirement for a president's signature, to overturn regulatory protections issued in the final 6 months of the previous administration. Now, I am linking to the public citizen site called rulesatrisk.org. You'll find it in the show file for today's podcast. You'll find that at peterbcollins.com. I run down all the stories that we cover and provide hyperlinks where I think they are worthwhile for you to go to the source material that I use as I ad-lib my comments from various news items that I put in front of myself each day. So the rulesatrisk.org details the other policies and regulations that are on the chopping block here in the early days of the 45 administration. It's Peter B. Collins live with news and comment on Facebook today. Lots of people clicking on. Good to see you there. And we're going to open up the phone lines on the half hour at 415-455-0102. Also related to the health care debate, we heard this week that Steve Bannon went up to the Capitol. This was before Trump tweeted his angry threats at the Freedom Caucus, the far right wing of the House Republicans. And Bannon is trying to rustle up support for some repeal and replace. But the senior leaders of the House acknowledge that it is now probably too late to actually repeal Obamacare this year. And one of the efforts to try to scuttle Obamacare and to make it look like it crashed because of its own defects, and it has defects, there's no doubt about that, is that they may try to pull the money that funds the subsidies. Now, I'm an Obamacare user. I don't have a huge income. I qualify for subsidies to help pay for my health insurance. And it's more critical for people who live closer to the poverty line. If those subsidies are eliminated or cut back, they will no longer be able to afford $1,000 or $1,200 a month for health insurance. So we know that they're trying to kill it. We know that they're trying to keep their fingerprints off killing it. But it appears that their hands are tied and that at least the subsidy funding will continue for this year and perhaps even into 2018. Now to the Trump-Russia scandal that continues to swirl in Washington. And Mike Flynn, yesterday it was learned, is trying to negotiate an immunity deal. He will testify before the Senate and or House Intelligence Committees about the Trump team in the campaign, the Trump transition, and the 20-odd days that he served as National Security Advisor. But he wants immunity, and you can't blame him, because we already know that Mike Flynn is in violation of the law that requires foreign agents to register. And it was disclosed that he earned almost $500,000 from a Turkish interest last year, and that he was running interference for the Turkish government, advocating for the transfer, the extradition of Fethullah Gulen, the Turkish imam who's in self-imposed exile in Pennsylvania. And he's a murky figure. But there was even a scheme we learned about this past week where former CIA director James Woolsey was invited to a meeting with Mike Flynn, and he bolted from that meeting when he heard them discuss illegal ways of snatching Fethullah Gulen and serving him up to Turks. So he needs the immunity if he's going to testify. There's no doubt about it. But Trump, in another ill-advised and impulsive/compulsive move, he tweeted this morning that he supports Flynn's request for immunity. Now, this could be the guy who brings down the Trump presidency. We don't know. The whole arc of this story is still evidence-free. We've got dueling leaks. We've got reports piled on reports piled on reports. But there isn't any evidence that, you know, is the foundation for that pile. So Mike Flynn might have a lot to say. And Trump is in high-risk behavior here when he tweets, Mike Flynn should ask for immunity in that this is a witch hunt, excuse for big election loss, by media and Dems of historic proportion. Now, Trump is a bluffer. He's a high-risk bluffmeister. This may be the bluff that he doesn't recover from. So this is just one element of the latest to surface in Washington in this scandal. And I continue my call for an independent special prosecutor. The Senate and House committees have established that they cannot be trusted. They are not credible. The chairs of each committee is tainted by carrying water for the Trump White House. And Devin Nunes still has a lot of splaining to do, a whole lot of splaining. Now, we have learned from a report published late yesterday by the New York Times the likely identities of the people who Nunes met with in the White House during the frantic sequence this past week, where he went to the White House in an Uber car late at night, he got admitted, he hung out with a guy who used to be his counsel on the Intelligence Committee, and they shared with him, we are told, these intercepts of phone calls showing that it's likely that the Trump conversations that have been leaked to the media to date originated from legal wiretaps where the American side was collected on what they call an incidental basis. And, of course, this is all kind of a joke because we pretend that our spooks are observing American law at all times, and that's laughable at this stage. So the people at the White House include a guy named Cohen Watnick, Ezra Cohen Watnick. Now, he was a Mike Flynn loyalist. And when Flynn got fired, Flynn's replacement, General McMaster, tried to bounce this kid. He's 30 years old. And he was overruled by Steve Bannon and perhaps the president himself. So Cohen Watnick went to work trying to find evidence to back up Trump's tweet that he was wiretapped on orders of President Obama. And then it led to the sharing of this information with Nunes, who didn't bother to notify his colleagues, either Democrat or Republican, on the Intelligence Committee. And it clearly poisons Devin Nunes as any fair arbiter of this investigation. Ah, but it gets worse. Spencer Ackerman, respected reporter at The Guardian, the British paper that covers America pretty well, he helps us understand the cozy love affair, if you will, the bromance between Flynn and Nunes. When Flynn got fired by the Obama Pentagon in 2014 from his job at the Defense Intelligence Agency, Nunes came to his defense and said that Flynn was a soldier and not a politician. And as he came under fire just before Flynn was fired, Nunes also came to his defense. So it remains to be seen if Devin Nunes can find a way to clean up the obvious conflicts of interest that he himself has created and brought attention to. And so this is a sick comedy that is being unveiled chapter by chapter on a serialized basis, and we are the hapless audience. The federal judge in Hawaii extended his stay on Trump's royal decree, the travel ban 2.0. And yesterday I noted this and said, well, why hasn't the Trump Justice Department filed its appeal? Well, late yesterday, I'm sure it was a result of listening to my podcast, the Justice Department filed an appeal here in the Ninth Circuit in San Francisco. That's the same court that upheld the original stay on the original royal decree back on February 9th. So the appeal process is rolling. The unanswered question is why it took them two full weeks to file this appeal, especially because they hysterically tell us that we're in danger. There is an Islamic State fighter ready to hop on a plane from Damascus or Cairo tomorrow. And Yet they took their sweet-ass time about this. If you're on Facebook, you're watching the live recording of the Peter B. Collins News and Comment podcast here on Friday. I'm opening up the phone lines on the half hour, and I invite you to call, comment on any of the subjects that I'm talking about, or you can pick one of your own as long as it has public interest. My phone number is 415-455-0102. Well, a New York Times editorial gets it right today that the so-called repeal announced yesterday of the transgender bathroom law in North Carolina is pretty much a charade. They refer to it as bait and switch. And the editorial reads, on Thursday, North Carolina repealed the law in name, but not in substance, hoping to appease organizations and employers who have boycotted the state, including the NCAA. So William Barber, the leader of the Moral Monday crusade there in North Carolina and a respected man, says we can never compromise on fundamental civil rights. It was never just a bathroom bill. It's a bill that discriminates against so many people in so many ways. And when you look at the fine print, when they passed it, it was to overturn an ordinance passed by the city of Charlotte that not only established the bathroom, open bathroom rule, but it said that there also was a ban on discrimination against LGBT persons. Well, that ban on discrimination is gone, and this new law prohibits any new local ordinances against discrimination until at least 2020. So this is, I think, a sleight of hand, and I hope that people will continue to fight for liberation of the people of North Carolina. Next week is going to be a showdown in the Senate over the nomination of Neil Gorsuch to the U.S. Supreme Court. And while I would love to see a lengthy filibuster that successfully blocks his confirmation, I'm dubious at this point. Already two senators who claim to be Democrats, Manchin of West Virginia, Heitkamp of North Dakota, they've said, hey, we're going to vote for Neil Gorsuch. And Pat Leahy, a senior member of the Senate from Vermont and a ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, he has said, I don't really like to do filibusters on a Supreme Court nomination. And of course, you know, depending on where you start the clock, Harry Reid blew up the filibuster requirement for judicial confirmations below the Supreme Court. Then the response of Mitch McConnell and the Republicans last year was to put on ice Obama's nomination of Neil Gorsuch. I'm sorry, of what was his name? Merrick Garland to take the seat that was vacated by Antonin Scalia's death. So, you know, depending on where you start the clock or look at the picture, you can say the Democrats are right, the Republicans are right. And they really didn't find a solid reason to block the confirmation of Gorsuch. Now, there are plenty of things I disagree with him on. He's a corporatist. He thinks corporations are people. He is a hardline pro-government, pro-corporate jurist. But the Democrats are trying to use the claim that he is not a mainstream nominee, and therefore they need a 60-vote standard to confirm him. But this is a concoction. There's never been a 60-vote standard other than to end debate to go to the vote on a nomination. And so my guess is that the Democrats will fracture and that the filibuster will last maybe for a day or two, and then they will throw in the towel, and perhaps by this time next week, Gorsuch will be confirmed. Every day I pause for a second to thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins podcast with your subscriptions. A lot of great people out there, like Mark Shapiro, Anna Gordonier. Mark just renewed his annual subscription. Anna's been with us for many years now, and I appreciate that, Anna. Mona Kobus, Brian Massey, they're all monthly subscribers, and I would like you to join them. All you have to do is visit my website, peterbcollins.com, and you click on the menu button, pull it down, Click on Become a Subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page. You got options there, $5, $10, $20 a month. We've got bonus books to give away with our $50 annual subscription and a mailing address in the continental U.S. So if you're able financially, I would appreciate your support of this podcast. And I want to mention again that coming up on the half hour, I'll be taking your phone calls. If you'd like to jump to the front of the queue, hop on the line right now at 415-455-0102. That's 415-455-0102. And I can see on my screen that a certain resident of Wisconsin who was a candidate for President of the United States in 2012 is monitoring the Facebook feed. And I hope the candidate will give us a call and let us know what's on his mind these days. Israel has crafted a slimy and slippery response to the gentle push from Trump to ease up on the settlements. Now, we know that all of the settlements in the West Bank are on Palestinian land. They are all, by definition, illegal. So Israel today said, well, look, in deference to Mr. Trump, we are not going to expand outside the current footprints of West Bank settlements. We'll build inside the footprint. And if you've seen these places, these are huge condominium complexes and villages that are built in a very dense manner. These are not kibbutzers who are out there camping, you know, with an RV or a tent and just settling. These are people who have permanently occupied Palestinian land. And so this new set of protocols issued by the Israelis, our attempt to quiet the objections of the Trump administration, and next week the dictator, the military dictator of Egypt, General al-Sisi, will be visiting the White House, and so will King Abdullah of Jordan. On the weekend, President Xi Jinping of China will be hanging out at Mar-a-Lago with Trump. But with al-Sisi and Abdullah, the issues of the settlements are sensitive matters. And so the timing of this is, a little off-key. But it just shows that Israel is determined to continue to violate the law and reject the criticism, the international criticism that they so richly earn over the settlement issues. In the show file for today's podcast, I've put in a link to this next item. It is a summary prepared by the Palestinian Center for Human Rights of the efforts just in the past week that the Israelis took in violation of rights and interests of the Palestinians. They killed a Palestinian child in Al-Jalazon refugee camp and a woman in occupied Jerusalem. Israeli forces continue to target the border areas in the Gaza Strip. No casualties there. Let's see what else here. Israeli forces conducted 51 incursions into Palestinian communities in the West Bank in 1 week alone. 57 civilians, including 14 children and 3 young women, were arrested in the West Bank. Israeli forces continued their efforts to create Jewish majority in occupied East Jerusalem. They forced a civilian to self-demolish his house roof in Beit Hanina, north of the city. 2 homes under construction were demolished, in addition to 2 inhabited ones in Al-Mukaber Mount. 14 people made homeless as a result. And so you just get a flavor here of the life that the Palestinians have to endure on a daily basis. And so I hope that snapshot is enlightening for you. Rexxon Tillerson, Trump's Secretary of State and the former head of ExxonMobil, did a little dance in Turkey yesterday in the capital of Ankara because he is trying to keep the Turks on board for the war against the Islamic State in neighboring Syria, while the Turks really ripped into the United States. And it appears that Tillerson, of course, is walking a tightrope there, because the Kurdish fighters in Syria are the most reliable for those aligned with the United States. But, of course, the Kurds are considered terrorists by the Erdogan government in Turkey, which is moving toward dictatorship with a referendum to increase the powers of the president coming up in the next few weeks. So Tillerson also faced demands for the extradition of Fethullah Gulen. He is the Turkish-born imam. He's a billionaire. He runs charter schools in the United States. He's a very murky figure. And the Turkish government blames him for the failed coup last July 15th. And so far, despite the fact that Mike Flynn was working for Turkey, was trying to influence Trump to get him to agree to extradite Gulen, had hatched this plan for an illegal effort to snatch Gulen, so far, the Trump administration has not moved to start any extradition for Gulen. A couple of quick international stories here. In South Korea, Park Geun-hye, the former president who was impeached recently, was jailed today as she faces criminal trial for bribery, extortion, and abuse of power. And I think this is a model that we could look to here in the United States. In Venezuela, President Nicolas Maduro is consolidating his power. And this week, the Supreme Court seized power from the National Assembly, essentially neutering the legislature. Now, this is payback by Maduro because the legislature spent the last year trying to remove him from office. And, of course, there are forces at play that are originating from beyond the borders of Venezuela. The U.S. has been determined to take out Maduro and, of course, Hugo Chavez, his predecessor. And we've done overt and covert things to try to achieve that. So it's a murky picture. But Maduro apparently sees his only way forward to take full power, and it does become a dictatorship. I don't know that that's going to help any of the severe economic problems or the food shortages that they face on a daily basis in Venezuela. And in Brazil, Eduardo Cunha, the conservative political leader who was the speaker of their lower house, he was convicted and sentenced on Thursday to 15 years in prison. Now, Cunha rolled up a huge fortune while he was in office, and he is the highest-profile politician to be sentenced as a part of the car wash investigation. They skimmed money from contractors with the state oil company Petrobras, and while the former president of Brazil, who was impeached last summer, there was no evidence that she took any money from the car wash scandal. Nevertheless, she was impeached. That was Dilma Rousseff. And now we're seeing things follow up there. Yesterday, I led the News and Comment podcast with an item about a group of people who are crowdfunding to take advantage of the new relaxed privacy rules that the Congress rammed through last week in favor of internet service providers, mostly cable and phone companies. And they adopted the looser privacy rules of the Federal Trade Commission, and it allows these internet providers to capture our browsing histories and sell them to advertisers to give us ads. And so, angered over this move, a group of activists started a GoFundMe campaign, and they're up to about $85,000 now. And their goal is to buy the data of members of Congress and release it to the public. They're not going to do anything nefarious like home phone numbers or personal addresses. But they say what's good for the people is good for the elected leaders. Now, in the last 24 hours, people have raised some questions that I don't have the answers to, like exactly how do I order up the browsing history of a specific member of Congress? I'm not sure how you achieve that, but I'm sure that there are clever techies out there who know exactly how to do that. We're going to take your phone calls here shortly, and I have a free book, a copy of Robbie Robertson's memoir about his years with the band called Testimony. And I'm going to give that to the second caller who gets on the air today at 415-455-0102. And I said it slowly for that guy in Wisconsin who's having a little trouble picking it up. Aldis, the number is, do I have to call you? The number is 415-455-0102. The other item on the agenda for TrumpCo is to lift the net neutrality rules that were put in place by the Federal Communications Commission in 2015. And this, of course, would allow big operators like Netflix to negotiate for better rates and to hog more bandwidth. And it could leave a small-time operator like Peter B. Collins at a very significant disadvantage, because my bandwidth and speeds could be reduced in favor of those who will pay a bigger amount for it. So this is another problematic pro-corporate move that is being described as lifting onerous regulation to allow American corporations to thrive. The way they package bullshit these days, it is pretty amazing, isn't it? All right. That's pretty much my news and comment podcast for today. Is there an issue that I raised that you'd like to talk about? Well, I'd like to talk with you about it. Now, I'm sticking my neck out here. We're live on Facebook, and there are 11 of you who are currently viewing. Over the weekend, hundreds of people will see the recorded version of this video feed. But I've got to ask one of you 11 people to call up right now at 415-455-0102. And voila, line one is lit up. And who's this, please?
This would be Aldis Tyler, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello, Mr. President. How are you?
Well, I got to tell you, it was a bumpy first term, but I think my reelection is going well.
And how much did the Russians help you back in 2012 when you ran, Aldis?
No, it was the Irish.
Oh, you got the Irish, huh?
The Russians hate me.
Yeah. Okay, now I'm getting messages from people that they can't hear the phone. That's very interesting, because the phone is output just like everybody else. Interesting. Well, we'll keep talking, Aldis, and maybe people will rectify the problem on their receivers. But what would you like to comment on today that we've covered so far in the podcast?
Well, basically at this point, I got to tell you that the North Carolina bathroom bill is the thing that, of all the things that's going on right now, I thought was actually one of the stories that was kind of getting shoved under the table by so much attention on Flynn and Russia and everything else, where we really, really got to watch what's going on here, because I guarantee you that that was absolutely a ploy to try to get the NCAA back and all these other big money spenders back into the state of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And by putting a new face on not only essentially the same bill, but actually making it worse, as you pointed out, just keep an eye on that for the next month or so. See if you actually do get some of these major sponsors coming back under that flimsy excuse.
Well, Aldis, you make a number of good points here, and I'm going to repeat your comment a bit in case people still aren't able to hear the phone part of the audio feed here. Aldis is raising the issue of the bathroom law and the flimsy substitute that was agreed to this week in North Carolina. And Aldis, first and foremost, this is a very powerful wedge issue. It has the potency of the ballot measures that Karl Rove ran back in 2004 against same-sex marriage. And it is peeling people off. I know some feminists, for example, who are otherwise progressive and lefty, who believe that we have to protect the sanctity of the bathroom, and that men who are posing as transgender will use this as a pretext to become voyeurs or predators. And I will admit that this could happen, and it may have happened in isolated circumstances, but to make policy based on the fears of a minority of individuals, and also to really give in to the ignorance of people who promote this kind of hysteria, I think is a principle that we have to stand for. And I agree with you that it is going to be up to the NCAA to, what, PayPal refused to build a call center there because of this. We need to see corporate power exercised, because it's unlikely that government power is going to be brought to bear against this.
And PayPal is an excellent example, Peter, of where we can immediately apply some pressure, because I, for example, have a PayPal account now that is I've been using now for over 12 years. And as a longtime subscriber and user of their services, I am going to, after I get off the phone with you, make sure to jot a little email down there thanking them for their stand on the original bathroom bill and reminding them that what has happened here is actually no better, and in fact in some ways worse, and encouraging them to renew their commitments to not fall for the trap that basically they're putting out in North Carolina.
Well, now, Aldous, like you, I use PayPal a lot. I rely on it for most of the subscriber revenue that comes into the podcast here. And I will follow your lead and send a note to PayPal later today, encouraging them to maintain their stand and to reject this very weak compromise that affirmatively bans the consideration of non-discrimination ordinances for at least 2.5 years. And this, you know, is unconscionable. We really have to stand firm and reject, you know, and I do understand that the new governor there has a completely Republican legislature, and that, you know, they tried to cut his balls off illegally by limiting his ability to appoint people without Senate confirmation. They did a lot of things at the end of the last session to try to limit the power of this new Democratic governor. So I do understand the pickle that he's in, but that's the bigger reason why we need more outside pressure on North Carolina in order to drive home the point that, you know, this compromise is not acceptable.
Oh, exactly. Now, Peter, I am with you in being dismayed by seeing some people who are otherwise very progressive, especially feminists, who support things like the bathroom bill. But I will at least give them one bit of the benefit of the doubt, and that is, anytime women have to share restrooms with men, let's face it, it's usually not very pleasant for them, in as much as the mess we leave behind, everything else. I could see where maybe they're a little hesitant. But the fact is that this bathroom bill has not been flushed, and it's left a horrible mess floating there.
I'll repeat that line. Aldous said that this bathroom bill has left a horrible mess and needs to be flushed. Thank you very much, Aldous. I appreciate your call today, buddy.
All right. Thank you, Peter.
Good to talk to you. And let's invite one more phone call. We've got a few more people who have logged onto the video here in the last few minutes. And I'd appreciate a phone call at 415-455-0102. I've got a book to give you if you are the caller, and it'll give me a chance to test the audio and see if it was just a problem with Aldous's line. So 415-455-0102 is the number. And while I wait for that call to come in, I wanted to share this story with you. Vice News is reporting that lawmakers in Connecticut are considering a bill to allow police agencies to have weaponized drones. Now let that sink in for a minute. We've had struggles here in California over sheriff's departments and others who want to use drones, they say, just for reconnaissance. They say, what's the difference between flying a drone with a camera and a helicopter or a fixed-wing airplane? Well, the difference is that you can't always detect a drone, and the cameras now are so powerful that they can be highly intrusive. But in Connecticut, they're thinking of moving into this uncharted territory. Now, they claim that the weaponized drones would be used in very limited circumstances, like a school shooting or a kidnapping. Oh, Sandy Hook, huh? Is that the way you want to grease the passage of drones and the acceptance of this? Now, this is really alarming, because the idea that local cops would have this kind of military firepower, and that we would allow the technological advancements that have been used and abused by our government in, drone strikes in countries like Pakistan and the war zones of Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Somalia. Well, I have a real problem with this. And we need to shut this down faster than who shot Bob. Now, I just see a viewer and listener who logged on from London. So we've got London, we've got Australia. We have really spanned the globe here today. And I'm glad that people are discovering our Friday Facebook Live. I'm going to continue to do this for the foreseeable future. And I want to encourage you to call in because I'd like to turn this into much more of an interactive platform. So I want to thank you for listening today. You can find the audio and the show file, the text with hyperlinks for today's podcast at peterbcollins.com. And I hope you will. Now, one thing I just forgot. I have a couple of clips from in-depth interviews that have been released in the last couple of days. And I decided to take a look at some important aspects of our history. And history and context, I often complain, are largely missing from American media accounts of the present day. So one of the in-depth interviews that will be released later today to my subscribers is with Professor Alexandra Chasen. Her new book is called Assassin of Youth, and it traces the early days of the war on drugs, they were called narcotics at the time, going back to the 1930s. And the first drug czar in this country was a man named Harry Anslinger, and her book is loosely focused on him, but it is a fabulous and kind of unorthodox approach to looking at the history of the drug war in this country. And I asked Alexandra Chasen if prohibition works. And this is what she had to say.
Kind of mysterious elements of the war on drugs is why we have a set of law and policy that, even though it fails to meet its own stated goals year in, year out, going on 70 plus years, why is this program so durable and so popular? It must be doing something. What it is not doing is eliminating or even significantly reducing drug traffic or drug use.
That's Alexandra Chasen, the full interview available to subscribers today at peterbcollins.com. And I've got another caller. I'll get to you in just a second. But I also want to share a clip from the other in-depth interview that I released yesterday. It takes a look at the history of the early American cavalry in this country. And it's called Kearney's Dragoons Out West, The Birth of the U.S. Cavalry. And in the interview, we talk about a range of issues, including the use of the cavalry to help explore the West, to contain the natives, to protect the white settlers who were migrating westward, and then to get involved in the Mexican War that took place in 1846 to 1848. I have to say that I learned a lot about some gaps in my knowledge of American history, and one of the questions I put to Will Gorenfeld, the co-author of the book, is what about firewater in the West? Because the white settlers introduced alcohol and developed, well, the Indians developed quite a taste for it.
The Dragoons were fairly effective at keeping alcohol off the reservations, but Indians would travel to trading posts and trade in whatever, you know, supplies they had for booze. Mm-hmm. And there was an addiction there, and that was where the problems would occur. Kearney, when he went out west in 1845, was west of the Rocky Mountains. They were manufacturing whiskey in Taos, New Mexico, which was then part of Mexico, mm-hmm. and they were shipping it to areas where there were Indians. And Kearney intercepted a wagon train of that stuff and smashed it up.
So that's an interesting excerpt from our conversation. The co-authors of the book are Will Gorenfeld and John Gorenfeld, and John is the longtime webmaster of the Peter B. Collins podcast. That's the connection, and you deserve to know. So we go back to the phones here because there's a caller on line one. Hi, who's this?
Hi, hello there. This is Ray Lutz calling.
Hi, Ray.
I just wanted to make sure you got your sound tested. Didn't hear anyone else calling in.
Well, thank you, Ray. I appreciate that. And now somebody said that the excerpt that I just played was very faint, too. So people are telling me that my voice is coming through fine, and maybe you can even hear Chloe piping up in the background right now. But the audio elements from the recording and from the phone, I guess, aren't getting through, huh?
Mm. I can't test it now because I'll be on repeat, but I wanted to bring up, we are going into our court case on April 14th at 2 o'clock here regarding the nuclear waste dump on the beach at San Onofre.
All right. This is Ray Lutz calling, and he's telling us that on April 14th, they have a hearing regarding the nuclear waste at San Onofre.
Yeah. San Diego Superior Court.
Okay.
I wanted to let you talk about something that I'm kind of worried about, and that is whenever we get the situation figured out so that the Democrats are beating the drum against something like Russia, then that's sometimes a fabricated situation so that they can get a war going under Republican control. So what do you think about that? Is this thing with Russia real, or is this a fabricated thing just so that they can get spend a lot of military money?
All right. Ray's asking my view of the Russia-Trump scandal so far. As I said earlier, Ray, we have a lot of reports that are based on leaks. We have barely shreds or shards of evidence so far. And so, you know, we can see that there are clear business connections that Trump had with Russians in the past. We can see that he surrounded himself by people who are compromised, like Rex Tillerson, who won the Friend of Russia Award a couple of years ago. We know that Wilbur Ross, the Secretary of Commerce, continues to hold an interest in a bank in Cyprus that is a favorite for Russian money laundering. So there's quite a bit of circumstantial evidence. But Mike Flynn may be the songbird who I would compare to John Dean in the Watergate scandal, who may have information that could really turn this into a substantial criminal investigation. But at this stage, we really just have, you know, a series of assertions. When you look deeper into the claim that Russia hacked the DNC servers, that's based on CrowdStrike and almost nothing else. And the FBI and the CIA, in turn, based their assertions, which are not defined as evidence-based claims, on CrowdStrike. And so, you know, fundamentally, the first pillars of this scandal, again, the claim that Russia hacked the DNC and John Podesta and gave that stuff to WikiLeaks, this remains unproven. And so as it kind of widens out from there, we have to look at these unsubstantiated claims. And so I really wish I had a definitive answer for you. We need an impartial and objective investigation, but there doesn't seem to be any way to get it. I don't trust commissions like the 9/11 Commission or the Warren Commission. We cannot trust the Senate or House Intelligence Committees. And even though Jeff Sessions has recused himself, I think the guy's name is Rosenstein, who's supposed to be confirmed as the Deputy Attorney General. We have no way of evaluating whether he will select a really unbiased prosecutor to investigate and prosecute this, and if the resources and latitude will be given to that prosecutor to conduct anything that turns out to be credible. So at this stage, it's a mess. And to your original point, Ray, the biggest indicator that Trump wants a war is that he has proposed increasing Pentagon spending by about 10%. And he doesn't justify that with any, you know, rationale of, oh, we got to confront this or we got to confront that. So it does appear that he's itching for a war. He just hasn't quite identified, where he wants to take that.
Thank you very much, Peter.
All right, Ray, thanks for calling in. And I will check on the audio here. I'll listen back to the video feed and see what we got. I can tell that the audio here in my system and going into the recorder for the podcast is all 100%. So maybe there's a glitch at Facebook today. And if that's the case, we'll track it down and fix it. Thanks for joining me for my news and comment podcast live on Facebook. We'll do it again next Friday, and I hope you'll join me then. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Chloe. Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you.
Say goodbye.
Keep smiling until then.